Hello and welcome to the Essentials of Healthy Living on Progressive Talk AM 1260, sponsored by the Village Green Apothecary. I'm Dr. Kevin Passero, co-host for the show with Dana Lake. I will be your host for the next hour, and Dana returns next week. We are here every Wednesday from 5 to 6 p.m. and also at our new time, Saturdays at 10 a.m. Feel free to visit www.myvillagegreen.com for a complete radio show archive. So if you listen to this show and you like what you hear and you want to see what else we've been discussing, we are just coming up on our year anniversary. So we have lots of great shows archived at My Village Green website. Feel free to log on, scroll through, and pick out something that looks interesting. I'd just like to take a minute to go ahead and introduce myself. I'm Dr. Kevin Passero, and I'm a naturopathic doctor. For all of you out there who don't know about naturopathic doctors, a naturopathic doctor should have graduated from a naturopathic medical school, which is a four-year institution that requires a bachelor's degree and many of the same admission requirements as a regular medical school. Naturopathic doctors are trained as primary care doctors that specialize in natural therapies. We receive extensive training in nutrition, herbal medicine, homeopathy, vitamin therapy, physical medicine, Chinese medicine theory, and all of this is grounded in the same scientific context of anatomy, physiology, and biochemistry, and everything that regular medical doctors are trained in. So it creates a very nice subset of a profession for people who are interested in really learning about how natural therapies can assist in their health issues. I have a private practice in Annapolis, but I'm also available at the Village Green for one-on-one consultations on Tuesdays. If you have any questions or have any concerns or questions about the radio show, feel free to give a call over to the Village Green on Tuesdays, or you can feel free to go ahead and email me at Dr. Passero, D-R Passero, P-A-S-S as in Sam, E-R-O, at gmail.com, and I'd be happy to go ahead and answer any questions next time I am on the air. So you'll make sure to tune in for that. Today, we are going to be covering women's health issues because it is the month of October. This is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, so we're going to spend a little bit of time talking about breast cancer and breast cancer awareness. It's certainly a hot topic this time of year. And we're also going to not limit our conversation to that, but I have some very other exciting topics to discuss this evening. One of the most important ones, we're going to talk about a really exciting new nutrient that's been emerging in the research that is so vital for women's health, specifically osteoporosis. In my practice, I see so many women that are concerned with osteoporosis. It is a huge concern amongst women these days and seems to be everybody's being diagnosed with it with some level or form of it. And a lot of people aren't comfortable with the osteoporosis drugs, maybe because they're not so convinced about drug therapy in the first place, or the osteoporosis drugs often can have unpleasant side effects. One of the most common ones being a lot of gastrointestinal discomfort and upset that's gotten a little bit better since they've been spreading out the dosing schedules, where now you'll see in commercials where sometimes you only have to take these medications once a month versus once a day is what it used to be. Sometimes it's once a week, and that does cut down on those side effects. However, there is a lot of raging debate about the kind of bone that these drugs build. Is it a good quality bone? Sure, it increases bone density, but does that really result in less hip fracture? So we're going to get really into this topic, and I have a great special guest. It's another fellow naturopathic physician colleague of mine who is very knowledgeable about these things, and we're going to have him on in a little bit to discuss some of these great issues with you. I want to just start off the show talking a little bit about breast cancer and reviewing some things with breast cancer. So I always like to start with a few statistics. It kind of grounds us and helps us to understand sort of where we are at and gain perspective of what's going on with this disease. According to the CDC, breast cancer is the most common form of cancer aside from non-melanoma skin cancer in women. So again, we all know how common it is. Most of us have known somebody or know somebody who's known someone that has had breast cancer, unfortunately. The incidence is now up to 1 in 8 women. In the last 40 years, the incidence of breast cancer has absolutely surged, basically at what would be called an exponential rate. It is becoming an epidemic. The U.S. ranks the highest out of 16 other developed nations for the incidence of breast cancer. However, we don't quite rank the lowest. There are 3 other countries that rank lower than us when it's about deaths related to breast cancer. So this is really interesting. I mean, we rank out of all these developed nations, given what our healthcare system is and the amount of wealth that the United States has, we are still ranking the worst as far as incidence of breast cancer. Luckily, we're not all the way at the bottom as far as deaths, probably because we do have a lot of really good advanced medical scientific systems, which helps with early diagnosis, and we do have a lot of programs and awareness about it. But I really think this is reflected as far as the overall health of Americans and what a lot of people eat, diet, nutrition, lifestyle, of the general American population. And that's probably somewhat contributing to why breast cancer rates are so high in this country. I mean, obesity is definitely highly correlated with breast cancer, and we know that obesity is at a very high epidemic rate in our country. And then breast cancer is also the second leading cause of cancer death in women after lung cancer. So again, another very sad statistic. So I just want to cheer things up a little bit after that. Not all of the research and not all of the information about breast cancer is all gloom and doom. There's a lot of really great stuff out there. There's definitely advances in early detection. The treatments for breast cancer are definitely getting better and more advanced. And women are living longer. And more women are living longer with the current advances that we have in breast cancer. Now, from my side of it, I get really excited because there's a lot of things that can be done from a natural perspective to really help women with this issue of breast cancer. There are so many things that a woman can do before she even gets the possibility of a diagnosis to help prevent breast cancer. And then on top of that, there are so many things a woman can do once she's been diagnosed in conjunction with the standard medical treatments to greatly increase her ability to tolerate the medical treatments, whether it be chemotherapy or radiation or surgery. And there is good research out there indicating there are some things you can do to reduce your potential recurrence of a breast cancer. So we're going to talk about some of that. I want to share some of that information with you before our first break to discuss some of these things that are out there and how exciting they are. You know, I mean, a lot of women are unfortunately, you know, they get all these statistics thrown at them. 1 in 8 women, second leading cause of cancer death, highest rate of incidence in, you know, developed countries, all of these really scary instances. And then forget about it. If you have a mom or a sister or an aunt or a daughter that has had breast cancer, you know that your risks are higher. And what the standard medical community does at this point is really nothing until you're diagnosed, except for ask you to do regular breast exams every month and get your mammogram if you're in the age category necessary for getting a mammogram. And unfortunately, that's not a lot of things that somebody can do to empower themselves to help prevent something that could potentially be life-threatening. And when the instance is that high, is that high of having breast cancer, it would really, I think, makes women so comfortable and so much more comfortable and empowered when I share with them all of the things that they can do to help prevent breast cancer before it even comes to be an issue. So, I mean, number one, we know healthy diet and lifestyle. I mean, you've heard it a million times. Obviously, I'm not the first person telling you this, and this is not the reason why you're tuning into this radio show. But you have to have that piece in place. We're talking about exercise. We're talking about eating right, avoiding fast food, trans fatty acids, highly processed foods. We know the National Cancer Association clearly states that eating a diet richer in vegetables and high in fiber, low in carbohydrates, low in processed foods, low in trans and saturated fats is going to reduce your risk of pretty much all kinds of cancer. So again, you know, very important. I can't do a show with natural health advice for breast cancer without mentioning that. So there's a few other things that we're going to talk about, and basically I need to go to break. So the things that we're going to come back to after break are the things that you've probably never been told, the things that your doctor or that cancer associations and cancer societies haven't recommended for you, not because they're not effective, but because there are things that are considered to be more alternative, but are very much backed with real science and things that you need to know about. So again, this is the Essentials of Healthy Living on Progressive Talk, 1260 AM. Remember to tune in every Wednesday from 5 to 6 and also at our new times at Saturdays at 10 AM. Don't go anywhere. We will be right back after this break. Hello. Hello, and welcome back to the Essentials of Healthy Living. This is Dr. Kevin Passero. We are on Progressive Talk AM 1260. And please remember that this show airs Wednesdays from 5 to 6 p.m. and also at our new time, Saturdays at 10 a.m. And feel free to visit www.myvillagegreen.com for a complete radio show archives. We have been talking about women's health and breast cancer awareness. This show, we're going to cover that topic as well as osteoporosis, which is another very important women's health issue. Before the break, I was talking about some of the more conventional things you may have heard regarding breast cancer prevention, and all I got a chance to touch on was healthy diet and lifestyle. I promised you that after the break, we would be talking about things that you may not have heard of that are more specifically related to alternative medicine. So one of the first things that I want to talk about, which a lot of women don't do, or they may have heard of this, is actually lymphatic massage of the breast, which is something that is very important to do on a daily basis. It can also double as a self-breast exam, but verbally to describe it, how I recommend it for women is basically if you envision the breast and you envision that the nipple would be like the center of a bicycle wheel, and the spokes radiate out from that center. And what I have women do is basically follow the spokes from the nipple all the way to the outer area of the breast and go all around, just like you would all around the circle of a bicycle wheel. And what I have them do is always try and end the stroke going towards the armpit, because that's where the lymphatic channels leave the breast, go back into the body to get drained back into the heart for recirculation and detoxification. By doing a lymphatic massage, you are draining any toxic chemicals or toxic elements or lymphatic stagnation that's happening inside the breast. There is a type of imaging that can be done of the breast called thermography. Thermography is very interesting, very exciting. I do strongly recommend it for women. It does not, say this very clearly, it does not take the place of a mammogram. However, it can give you very interesting insight into the health of your breast tissue. And whereas mammography is designed to catch a breast cancer once it has already happened, thermography is often able to catch potential breast cancers anywhere from 3 to 5 years before they're even an issue by tracking these changes in breast tissue before it becomes a cancer. And in working with women who I've recommended for thermography, we have looked at pictures, thermographic pictures of the breast prior to the lymphatic drainage and after, and we see a great improvement in breast health from doing the lymphatic drainage on a daily basis, or lymphatic massage, I should call it. So the best time to do this is actually in the shower when there is already some soap on the body, because that adds as a nice lubricant so that your fingers can easily slide over the skin, basically like a massage oil, so that you can really move that lymph well. So that's something that is so easy, so simple to do, that I highly recommend as a nice preventative tool for keeping the breast tissue healthy. Another really important thing that can be done is in regards to some different supplements. There is one type of supplement called diindolemethane, which is also referred to as indole-3-carbinol. Okay, these are big, long, fancy names. But basically what we're talking about here is we're talking about supplements that are extracted primarily from cruciferous vegetables. And when I say cruciferous vegetables, these are going to be anything like kale, collard greens, broccoli, cabbage, bok choy, arugula, watercress, cauliflower. These are all things that are in the cruciferous family vegetable, and they contain this one component. And when scientists study this one component, they see a very strong association with high intake of this type of chemical and lower incidence of breast cancer. So they are directly related. So it is a very, very powerful tool. There's been very good animal studies as well as human clinical trials regarding this specific component of cruciferous vegetables and breast cancer. Again, the name of it is indole-3-carbinol, which is often abbreviated as I3C. And the other name for it is diindolmethane, which is often abbreviated as DIM. If you come into the Village Green, we actually have a product. You know, we have several different companies that make this product, but one specifically that's a very nice one is made by our Pathway brand, and it's just called I3C Plus, and it's basically indole-3-carbinol. So this is one that is a very, very good supplement to take for all women. I even take it as a male, actually, because there's a lot of really good research behind indole-3-carbinol, diindolemethane, and prostate cancer, and keeping the prostate healthy. And, you know, although I'm younger than the age necessary to really be concerned about my prostate right now, basically, we know that it works by influencing how your body interfaces with hormones and hormones in the environment. And that seems to be a potential real trigger as to why we're seeing such increases in some of these hormone-related cancers. So I think for any healthy male or woman, this is not a bad supplement to consider, specifically for a woman. Now, if you're not a supplement taker and you don't want to just take things to take things, you definitely want to consider it if you have a family history of breast cancer, a first-degree relative with breast cancer, or you, for some reason you potentially have an increased risk of breast cancer. It's definitely something that you want to consider. Now, the other thing to think about is that you can just eat a lot more of this stuff in your diet. You're not going to get the same therapeutic effect that you would if you took the supplement, but it does not hurt to go ahead and to eat more broccoli, more kale, any of those cruciferous vegetables. If you forget what a cruciferous vegetable is or what the family is, just go online, type it into any search engine, and you'll go ahead and get a list of everything that falls under that family. And eating more of these is definitely very, very important. So right now I'm going to bring on our special guest because we're going to talk a little bit about a couple different vitamins. I'm going to bring on Dr. Brian Walsh. Dr. Brian Walsh graduated from the University of Bridgeport College of Naturopathic Medicine, which is up in Bridgeport, Connecticut. Him and his wife have a functional medicine-based practice in Columbia, Maryland here, where they nutritionally support clients with conditions such as metabolic syndrome, Hashimoto's syndrome, which is a thyroid disorder, adrenal fatigue, which I've talked about a lot on this show, as well as menopause. He's been a guest lecturer at the University of Maryland Medical School and has spoken at the American Association of Naturopathic Physicians annual conference, which is sort of the big to-do for all of us naturopathic doctors. Dr. Walsh is currently working on an exciting project called Fat Is Not Your Fault, which is designed to help people understand that fat loss is much more than just diet and exercise, that balancing one's internal physiology is critical for fat loss to occur. You can learn more about Dr. Walsh and his practice at www.visvitality, which is spelled V-I-S-V-I-T-A-L-I-T-Y.com. So, Brian, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Kevin. I appreciate that.
So I talked a little bit about diindolemethane, but I wanted to launch into something a little bit about vitamin D before we have to take our next break in a few minutes and talk about the importance of vitamin D. And, because I really think this relates to what we're going to talk about later in the show in regards to osteoporosis.
Sure.
What I like to tell all the women out there, if you have not had your vitamin D levels tested, go to your doctor and demand it. It is pretty much always covered by insurance now. It is not an expensive test. It can easily be tagged on to other tests, and it is critically important to managing your overall health. So vitamin D is very, very important. Go get yourself tested because, Brian, as I'm sure you know and you tell your patients, how you're going to supplement with vitamin D is entirely dependent on what your blood levels are on your blood test, correct?
Completely. Absolutely. Completely.
Right. So I have plenty of people come in and say, oh, yeah, my doctor said take vitamin D. I saw on the Today Show, you know, Dr. Nancy Schneiderman said that, yes, vitamin D can cut the risk of breast cancer by 50%. 50%. There's nothing else out there that anybody is offering, whether it be conventional medicine or alternative medicine, that has the kind of research behind it that vitamin D has for preventing certain types of cancer, specifically breast. So people go out and they say, oh, yes, well, I take another 400 IUs a day. Okay. But what will 400 IUs get you? You do not know how that is benefiting your health until you understand if you are deficient or not deficient in vitamin D. And the only way to tell that is by getting the blood test. So, Dr. Walsh, tell us now, what are the optimal ranges for vitamin D? Because there's a lot of misconception about that.
There is a lot of misconception, and I'll even say that within even the alternative world, they seem to have some disagreement in terms of what levels they like to see as well. the Life Extension Foundation likes to see levels of 75 and above. Some people say that for breast cancer prevention, you're looking at maybe 55 and above. It really depends on the doctor. However, and I don't know how you feel about it, but generally speaking, 50 is sort of on the low range of optimal, in my opinion, and I like to see them up around 70, 75 when possible.
Right. So that's, I mean, typically now people are very misled by this in some ways, because when you get your lab results back, the reference range is 32 to 100. So a lot of people are being told that they don't need any additional vitamin D supplementation if they're at 33 or just above that normal range. So just because you're in the normal range doesn't mean that you can't benefit or that you wouldn't benefit more from taking a little bit more vitamin D. So, I mean, typically I like to see people at least at around 55. You know, a 65, 70, you're reaching more optimal, but there is a word of warning with vitamin D. Vitamin D does have the potential to be toxic. So Dr. Walsh, why don't you explain a little bit about this?
Well, and that's exactly what you were talking about before with the testing. It's you know, vitamin D, which is, it's interesting now, is if it were found nowadays, it would not be considered a vitamin, but rather a hormone.
That's right.
And you know, so when you talked about testing, there are people out there that hear, well, you have to take vitamin D and you have to take high doses, but they don't test it. And then what happens is they can just be flagrantly taking these things and causing themselves a lot of problems. And you know that if you take anything in excess, especially any kind of hormones, that every other system in the body can be negatively affected as well. So that's why the testing is absolutely critical. Even if you're taking vitamin D and you think that you're safe, you really want to get tested just to make sure you don't get to toxic levels.
Exactly. So there's many reasons to test. I mean, one of the reasons why vitamin D has a potential for toxicity is, well, not only is it a hormone, but it's also considered a fat-soluble vitamin, which has the potential to store up in your body a little bit more than other vitamins. So, you know, you want to get tested, and you want to get tested repeatedly, number one, to make sure that you have enough, and number two, to make sure that you don't have too much. So we got to cut to break real quick. When we come back, we're going to pick up this conversation, talk about a few more things relating to breast cancer, and then we have a very exciting mystery nutrient, basically, that we're going to be introducing that is really on the cutting edge forefront of osteoporosis prevention. So this is Dr. Kevin Passero with the Essentials of Healthy Living here on Progressive Talk 1260 AM. Do not go anywhere. We will be back in a minute. Welcome back to the Essentials of Healthy Living on Progressive Talk AM 1260. I'm Dr. Kevin Passero, and we are sponsored by the Village Green Apothecary, located in Bethesda, Maryland. And I'm just going to remind you to tune into our show, The Essentials of Healthy Living, on Wednesdays from 5 to 6 p.m. And also, don't forget, we have a new time, Saturdays at 10 a.m. to tune in. So please don't miss out. So today we've been talking about women's health. We've spent pretty much the first half of the show discussing breast health and breast cancer, and we're going to move on to the second half of the show to be talking a little bit more about osteoporosis. I have a very, very wonderful, brilliant special guest on, Dr. Brian Walsh, who is a fellow colleague and naturopathic physician. And we were just sort of recapping some stuff on vitamin D, and we were talking about before the break the importance of supplementing with vitamin D and also the importance of getting your vitamin D levels tested. Now, Dr. Walsh, I'd be really interested to get your opinion on this because honestly, I haven't quite formed one yet, but for a long time, there was a lot of bias for people to make sure they were taking vitamin D3 because it was clearly, or they felt it was clearly shown that vitamin D3 supplementation really helped raise blood levels, and it was much more important to use that form of the vitamin. However, there has been some more recent backlash against vitamin D3 saying that the other form of vitamin D, vitamin D2, does just a good of a job. Can you weigh in on this issue at all?
Well, just that I've seen the same thing, and you've been around in this industry long enough to know that, you know, when one thing comes out and seems to work, then sure enough, somebody comes in from the other side saying that something's better. And really, at the end of the day, I don't know. I mean, I haven't gotten inside somebody's body to really see which one's better. I stick with the D3 at the moment, just because there is fairly decent backing on that. If I start to see more about D2, then I might go that direction. But, yeah, you know, at the end of the day, I don't know how much it matters. The one thing I will just quickly comment on, and I think this speaks to sort of our naturopathic training, but natural forms when possible. You know, I think cod liver oil, though it doesn't have high levels of vitamin D in it, it is natural vitamin D from a natural food source. And so if somebody is supplementing with synthetic vitamin D, which a lot of people are nowadays, I also like to, and I don't know if it has any particular benefit, but to do the cod liver oil along with it. And I guess my hope is that there's some synergistic effect between the natural vitamin D found in the cod liver source and the synthetic vitamin D that we're giving them as well.
Sure, yeah. Always try and get what you need from nature, the way the body was intended to have it delivered.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, my opinion right now is we know that taking D3 doesn't cause you any more harm than taking D2. It seems to work very well at raising blood levels. The only reason why some of the stuff about D2 is a little bit exciting is because D2 is from a vegetarian source. So for patients who are strict vegetarians, sometimes they don't like to take the D3 because most D3 is derived from animal sources. So it may offer a way for people who are vegetarians to go ahead and get their good vitamin D supplementation without having to compromise any of their ethical values or beliefs.
Sure.
So now let's definitely talk about osteoporosis. So, I mean, we can't talk about osteoporosis without talking about vitamin D. This topic segues, you know, dovetails right from breast cancer right into osteoporosis because, as we know, the body is required to have vitamin D in order to be able to absorb calcium. So you could be out there taking your calcium supplement every day, your recommended 1,000 milligrams or 1,200 milligrams, taking it religiously. However, if you've never had your vitamin D levels tested and they're low, and let me tell you, people, I tell you 32 is the low end of the range. I have had patients whose vitamin D levels are as low as 7 or 8. So you may be one of those people and you won't know unless you get tested. But for those people, if your vitamin D levels are that low, let me tell you how much calcium you're going to be absorbing from all that supplements that you're taking. Probably not a lot. You're wasting your time and your money. So make sure you get your vitamin D levels tested and make sure to take your vitamin D. Dr. Walsh, any comments on that?
No, not at all. I think you hit it pretty well there.
Okay. All right.
Yeah,
so
I've seen one as low as 5, incidentally, in my practice as well.
Yeah. And I mean, that's really, really not a good place for people to be.
And terribly deficient.
And they really, really do feel a lot better once you get those vitamin D levels up, not only psychologically because they know now they're able to absorb their calcium and that they know that they're protecting themselves with the anti-cancer effects, but, you know, they're also feel better in general because vitamin D is related to mood and related to a lot of other processes in the body, not just breast cancer and bone health. So let's talk about calcium because we just touched on that. There are a million forms of calcium out there, a million different types. There's liquids, there's chews, there's tablets, there's capsules, there's cheap ones, there's expensive ones. You know, there's all sorts of different stuff out there. So, Dr. Walsh, I'd love to get your opinion. I have mine. But what you think people should be looking for when selecting a calcium supplement?
Well, one that is not calcium carbonate, first of all.
And why is that? What is calcium carbonate and why should people be avoiding it?
No, it's basically chalk, and the absorption is minuscule at best. You know, things like Tums, for example, and this is the worst situation, is when people take Tums for their calcium because it does have that calcium carbonate in it. The calcium needs an acidic environment to be absorbed in the stomach, and so if somebody's taking Tums, which is an antacid, you're actually decreasing the stomach acidity and taking an inferior form of calcium in the first place. So the likelihood of getting any calcium from something like Tums at all is it's probably not going to happen.
Right. It's very low. And why are those supplements out there? Why do people buy them? Because they are cheap, right?
Yeah,
they
absolutely
meet the lowest price points because they're using the cheapest, most inexpensive form of calcium, but it's really not going to be doing much for your bones in the end.
Yeah, and I think, so when looking for them, again, you know, you could sit here and split hairs over like, which is the absolute best, but I know you like the hydroxyapatite. And my preference is for a chelated form of calcium where it's chelated to a couple glycine molecules, which is an amino acid. The body seems to treat it a little bit differently. And the research that I've seen on it seems that the tissues itself actually hold some of the calcium a little bit better, and that's ultimately where you want the calcium to go anyhow. So, again, you know, you could split hairs about things like that, but I think if somebody goes for the calcium hydroxyapatite or a chelated form, that they'll they'll get all the benefits that they need from it.
Okay, so let's talk about that. So you're out there, you hear this show, and you want to go get some calcium, or you go home and look at what calcium you have, you realize it's a carbonate, and you want to go get a good one. So you can go somewhere. There's one called calcium hydroxyapatite, and calcium hydroxyapatite is basically calcium derived from bone tissue of an animal. And the theory is that is because it's derived from bone, it basically more easily becomes bone. It does contain some other factors in it besides calcium that help signal the body that this needs that this calcium needs to be designated to bone tissue, or at least that's the theory behind it. We know it's pretty absorbable. There is some good research about its ability to affect bone health. Now, the chelated forms that Dr. Walsh is talking about, amino acid chelating forms, you want to look for something like a calcium citrate, or Dr. Walsh, I think you said you prefer a calcium glycinate. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's the one I tend to use, and it seems to work pretty well for people.
Or a calcium glycinate. Now, again, here we are, folks. We are just splitting hairs again. There's really no direct, definitive research showing that one of these is better than the other, except that we do know from scientific research that you're probably going to be better off with a calcium hydroxyapatite or with a chelated calcium like a citrate or a glycinate than you are going to be with the standard inexpensive calcium carbonate. So that's definitely an important thing to look for. Another important thing to look for is magnesium. So, you know, you want to make sure that magnesium is paired with your calcium, usually at least in a 1-to-1 ratio or a 2-to-1 ratio being 2 parts calcium, 1 part magnesium. So don't underestimate the importance of magnesium in a calcium supplement. And Dr. Walsh, if you have any comments on that, I'd be happy to hear them.
No, you know, I agree. It needs to be in balance. And that gets back to the vitamin D and anything else really in our industry that, a lot of people will hang their hat on one particular nutrient and then take only that. And that doesn't seem to be very beneficial because the body does best when it's in balance. So as long as they're getting calcium and magnesium and some of the other smaller trace minerals like copper and manganese and boron and silica, I suppose, then, that's a pretty good supplement if they have those things in there.
Okay, great. So I don't want to waste any more time before getting to this really important issue. I've sort of been teasing it the whole entire show, and I hope you stay tuned to be able to listen. But vitamin K. Vitamin K is what we're going to be talking about for a little bit, and it is becoming extremely coming to the forefront of research in regards to several things regarding calcium metabolism and how your body actually uses calcium. So just like your body needs vitamin D to absorb calcium, we're finding out that your body needs vitamin K to be able to distribute and manage the calcium once it's been absorbed. So this is an extremely important nutrient to be considering when we're dealing with osteoporosis and bone health. And unfortunately, I think it's gotten missed over and over and over again by the traditional medical community and the alternative medicine community until the last 3 or 5 years. So Dr. Walsh, why don't you go ahead and weigh in a little bit? Why don't you tell us, first of all, what you know about vitamin K, where is it found, different forms, you know, anything that might be helpful.
Yeah, well, and it's like you said, vitamin D is the hot ticket right now. And I really think that vitamin K, probably in the next, 10 years or so, when vitamin D dies down a little bit, is going to be the next big one. There was a study, and I don't have it right here with me, but it was very recent. And they said, the researchers basically said that in healthy individuals, it seems that people may be subclinically deficient in vitamin K, unbeknownst to anybody that this was even going on in the first place. And vitamin K has been well known for its coagulation effects in blood. And that's where current recommended doses comes from, because you don't need a whole lot of vitamin K in order to be able to get your blood to clot properly. And this is one of the reasons why infants, for example, are given the vitamin K shot, so that they don't have any kind of bleeding disorders right away. But so anyways, I think it's the big thing. Vitamin K comes in essentially two forms, phylloquinone and menaquinone. For simplicity's sake, it's K1 and K2. K1 is found in green leafy vegetables, and that's why people that are on Coumadin are supposed to stay away from that, because Coumadin will affect clotting, and so will vitamin K. But it's found in things like collard greens, spinach, broccoli. It's also found to some degree in things like soy oil and canola oil. Vitamin K2, menaquinone, is usually found in meat and cheese, but that's the type that's usually produced in the intestinal bacteria, and that's how we provide it for ourselves. It's also, I should say, too, there's different components, I know this might get confusing, of K2, menaquinone, there are a few different fractions as well. They're just simply called MK4, MK7, MK8, MK9, et cetera. And I'm sure they'll probably come up with some more later. I was going to talk about the MK7, 8, and 9. Those are ones that are found in fermented foods. And this study that I mentioned to you before about everybody seems to be maybe subclinically deficient in vitamin K. When you think about it, what I just said makes a world of sense as to why. One, we're not eating nearly as many green vegetables as we should be. And as a society, they've completely been taken away from our diet. Nobody eats them anymore. Two is due to monocropping and things like that and the use of pesticides, a lot of the nutrients are no longer found in vegetables anymore. I haven't seen anything specifically about vitamin K, but I wouldn't be surprised if that's deficient in some of those things as well, even if people are eating them. Lastly, we don't eat fermented foods anymore. As indigenous cultures, they used to eat those things all the time, things like kefir and yogurt, homemade, and sauerkraut, but we don't eat those anymore, as well as we have chronic dysbiosis pretty much as a society, so our own intestinal bacteria is probably not producing the vitamin K. So it makes a lot of sense that people are subclinically deficient in vitamin K.
Yeah, those are absolutely really, really great reasons. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to be finishing up about vitamin K, explaining a little bit more, and we're actually going to be talking about specific dosages, things that you can look for, and how important this is for bone health. If you have bone health issues or are concerned about your bone health, you cannot miss this next segment. So again, you are tuned into the Essentials of Healthy Living on Progressive Talk 1260, sponsored by The Village Green. Don't forget, we're here on Wednesdays from 5 to 6 p.m. and at our new time on Saturdays at 10. Don't go anywhere. We will be back right after these words. Hello and welcome back to the Essentials of Healthy Living, sponsored by the Village Green Apothecary, right here on Progressive Talk, 1260 AM. Remember, we are here on Wednesdays from 5 to 6 PM and at our new time on Saturdays at 10 AM. Today, we've been talking about women's health. We've been discussing breast cancer issues. If you're just tuning in, you need to go to www.myvillagegreen.com and click on the archives and download the show for today if you want to learn about different things you can do for breast health and breast cancer prevention. Now, we've been talking about osteoporosis in the second half of the show, and we just touched on such an important issue, a very, very important nutrient that is becoming more and more important in the arena of osteoporosis from a natural health perspective, and that is vitamin K. So we have one of my very brilliant colleagues on the phone, Dr. Brian Walsh, who's going to take a minute to talk to you guys a little bit about vitamin K and its role in calcium metabolism. So Dr. Walsh, why don't you go ahead and say a few words about that?
Sure, yeah. So we just talked about the different forms of vitamin K, but why is it important? Vitamin K in biochemistry, it has to do with something called a carboxylation reaction, and that basically helps, it helps proteins become active. And there's some really, really exciting research, and this is why I think it's going to be the big thing in the next few years, on vitamin K, like you were talking about, Dr. Passero, with osteoporosis and bone fractures and things like that, but also in atherosclerosis and cardiovascular disease. And, you know, that's the number one killer nowadays. And it affects women, in fact, in ways that it doesn't affect men. I mean, you've probably seen this yourself, but women are at a huge risk for cardiovascular disease and don't know it. They don't have the same classic symptoms many times as men do. So it's a huge issue. And here's basically how it works. It's really fascinating. There's something produced by the arteries. It's a protein called, it's MGA, it's matrix GLA protein, MGP, sorry, matrix GLA protein, GLA protein. And for it to become active, it's a vitamin K-dependent reaction. You have to have vitamin K to produce this matrix GLA protein. Now, the thing that's really important about that, however, is this protein, the one I was just mentioning, helps inhibit calcification of the arteries. And so it's the fact that it's a vitamin K-dependent reaction. And this protein, I'm sorry about that. We're good. It inhibits calcification of the artery. So if you are subclinically deficient in vitamin K, then you cannot stop calcification from happening in your arteries.
Right.
And the same thing basically happens in your bone as well. It activates a certain protein, osteocalcin, and because of that, that's where its role in osteoporosis is. There was a couple really interesting studies about that too. That people that were the higher the vitamin K status that they had, the less likelihood of hip fractures they had, which is important in women. That was done on 72,000 women. That women deficient in vitamin K had a 30% increase in hip fracture. And there was another study that showed people, the higher their intake of vitamin K, the less likely they were for cardiovascular disease. So it's an awesome nutrient, and I'm really excited to see what happens in the future with it.
Yeah, and there's been, you know, several other studies, you know, showing similar things in pretty large scales about, you know, vitamin K status relating directly to this issue of calcification of the arteries. So, I mean, just to break it down, I mean, what Dr. Walsh is saying is that if you don't have vitamin K, you can't produce the right protein that prevents your body from depositing calcium in your arteries. And calcium is the last place that you want, or your arteries is the last place that you want calcium being deposited. And what they found, you know, they used to think when they would look at atherosclerotic plaques in people and see calcium deposits, that it was a byproduct of just the plaque formation itself, that it was sort of an artifact. But what they realize now is the process that goes on in arteries in relation to calcification is a direct active process where the body is actually building very real bone tissue, compounds that are exactly identical to bone tissue in the arteries. And this is causing hardening of the arteries and causing all sorts of problems with plaque formation. So having adequate levels of vitamin K is extremely important for helping your body to regulate this calcium. So if you think about these two extremely important vitamins that you know, are becoming relatively new to the average person, vitamin D and vitamin K, in this story, I mean, you have calcium, which is basically the food that your body needs to make bone. You have vitamin D, which is what your body needs to absorb that food. And then you have vitamin K, which is what your body needs in order to move that food around to the right place so that it doesn't get stuck in the arteries and that it gets properly placed in the bone. And this is just really important things to consider. So, you know, we want to talk about, well, how do you get adequate levels of vitamin K? As Dr. Walsh mentioned previously, you know, the RDAs for vitamin K have traditionally been very low because your body doesn't need a lot of vitamin K in order to carry out clotting. And because vitamin K for many, many years was only associated with clotting issues, the people who set the RDAs say, well, fine, as long as you're getting just a very small, minimal amount, you're going to clot fine. That's all you need. That's all we're going to recommend that people get. But what we're finding now is all of these what's called subclinical cases of vitamin K deficiency, where people may have enough to, let's say, carry out clotting, but they don't have near enough to, say, carry out this role of calcium distribution and calcium metabolism. And if you know, Dr. Walsh made an excellent point. If you look at what we're doing in our society as far as diet, we've gotten very much away from what humans traditionally would eat and what traditional cultures used to eat. And if you go to places of the world where people still eat in that traditional way, you see much lower instances of osteoporosis. For example, this fact that it comes from fermented foods. So one of the highest concentrations of vitamin K2 in fermented foods comes from something called natto. Natto is a fermented Japanese dish that most Americans probably would not like or not eat, but it's very high in vitamin K. And we know that in cultures where people consume a lot of this fermented natto, they have much lower instances of osteoporosis and bone fracture rates. So diet can play a huge piece of this. Supplementation will also play an important piece of this, looking at women who already have osteoporosis or people who aren't going to eat a perfect diet per se. Also ties right back into the issue relating to the green vegetables and where we get vitamin K1 and how important vitamin K1 is for building bone and bone health. So the general recommendation is go to some place with some people that are knowledgeable about supplementation, like the Village Green, and find out, or your naturopathic doctor or your holistic MD or whoever you know that you go to for health advice, and try and help you find a good vitamin K supplement. Vitamin K2 dosages, probably around 1,000 micrograms, which is 1 milligram, In vitamin K1 dosages, probably somewhere around 5,000 micrograms is what you want to do. So, Dr. Walsh, we got to sign off for the evening pretty much. So I'm going to thank you so much for your time and your insight. It was a pleasure having you on.
Very much. Thanks so much. I do appreciate it.
All right. And in these last few minutes, I do want to remind you all, please come by and check out the Village Green Apothecary. This place has been there for 40 years. I mean, I'm there, which is great, but really it's the other people. There's so many people there that have a wonderful education, that are so educated. You probably won't catch me if you just walk in, but our staff is so knowledgeable. If you're going to venture into natural supplements, this is really a fantastic place to go to have a great selection and have people who have been working in this industry for 20 and 30 years help you make educated choices about the supplements that you take. So thank you for tuning in. This has been The Essentials of Healthy Living. I'm Dr. Kevin Passero. This is Progressive Talk 1260 AM. Have a great evening.